each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony, as I do on most Mondays, here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Hope everyone has enjoyed a good start to the summer. Memorial Day's over. We're getting ready to do our barbecuing and getting all the kids out of school. I have two of my three out, so two down, one to go. Last week of school for a lot of kids who go to Catholic school. So today, June, we've started the month of June. June has long been kind of considered the month for weddings. June, I think, is still, though October's creeping up behind it pretty quickly, June's the most popular month in the United States for weddings. So I thought it would be good this month to kind of focus on some issues related to marriage. And one of those is how well we in the Catholic Church prepare couples who are going to be married, who are going to be entering into not only a government-recognized relationship, a civil relationship, but in the Catholic faith, we believe that they are also entering into a sacramental relationship. So we view marriage a little bit differently than even some of our Protestant brothers and sisters do. So it is a covenanted sacramental relationship. And, you know, in order to do that, you really need a lot of preparation. And you really need to know the person you're entering into this relationship with. So to discuss this further, how to best prepare couples for marriage, I've invited Yvonne Britzolera, who for many years, along with her husband, Bruce, was a pre-Cana marriage facilitator for the Archdiocese of Chicago and helped to facilitate marriage, pre-marriage preparation for more than 800 couples. And she and Bruce have put together all of their insights and their helpful hints and a lot of other interesting information in a book called Now and Forever, Are We Ready for Marriage? It's available on Amazon.com and hopefully coming to Catholic bookstores near you as well. So Yvonne, thank you so much for being with me today.
You're welcome, Mary. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Yvonne, before we get into our discussion, I'd like to hear a little bit about how you met your husband. I know you are not a native Chicagoan, how you wound up moving to the Midwest. And then tell me a little bit about how you and Bruce decided to get into this kind of work.
Well, Bruce and I met actually here in Chicago, even though I was living in Dallas at the time through business. And we got married actually about a year to the day from the time that we met.
Wow, that's kind of a quick engagement. I mean, for, you know, by today's standards.
Yeah, we met in June, got engaged at Christmas, and got married the next June.
Okay.
So that's how we met. And actually, at the time I met, I wasn't Catholic.
Oh, my goodness. No, I didn't realize that. You're a convert.
I'm a convert. So a few years later, let's see, 96, I converted to Catholicism.
And what brought you into the church?
I'd always been kind of veering towards the Catholic Church.
Right.
My family.
What faith were you raised in, if any?
I was baptized Methodist. My parents were Lutheran, and we really didn't attend much church.
Okay. Yeah. And that's not mm-hmm. uncommon mm-hmm. for a lot of people whose parents are from two different denominations for the children just to be raised sort of in a generic way as Christians, but not in any particular kind of faith.
Yeah. My parents really weren't big churchgoers.
Okay. Okay.
Actually, being born in Bolivia, I was almost baptized Catholic.
Oh, no kidding. Okay,
because
your parents are German, correct?
Yeah. They were very good friends with Catholic priest down there.
Okay, interesting.
So
okay, so you came into the church, and then was this before or after you married your husband?
After.
Okay.
After.
And he was already Catholic?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, terrific.
Very strong Catholic. And then a few years later, we got involved with Focus because we were asked by one of our priests to attend the conference when the Archdiocese changed all of the marriage regulations.
Okay. So it's for our listeners who aren't familiar with Focus, because there's a couple of different Catholic groups that use that name, Focus. So can you explain what
Focus
that is?
Focus is, of course you'd have to ask.
I know there's the Fellowship of Catholic University Students.
Yeah, this is basically an inventory.
Correct.
That comes out of Nevada, can't remember right this second.
Okay, all right. Well, it's a marital assessment tool.
Inventory that the Archdiocese used to use solely.
Okay.
And the Archdiocese is now using that on a limited basis. There are some parishes like Holy Name Cathedral that still uses it for all of their couples.
Okay. So it's a way, it's kind of like a questionnaire.
Right. That
sort of
they
thing,
do online.
But, okay.
And then it is sent to a facilitator to meet with the couple.
Okay, excellent.
The Archdiocese is also using Catholic Couple Checkup, but that actually, the results go directly to the couple, and there is no facilitator involved.
Oh, I see. Whereas the other one would come to the facilitators, who would then go over your mm-hmm. test results with you. I actually know a couple who did Focus, and then unfortunately it was, one of these things where he skipped a question.
Mm-hmm.
So every answer that he filled in after that was not what he meant to say, and it came back with probably one of the worst compatibility ratings for this couple. And I remember the bride's mother actually called me because she knew I had some familiarity with it and was in an absolute panic. And then when they went back and looked at the questions that he had answered again, he thought, that's not the answer I gave to that. So anyway, he had filled out the whole form. It almost ended the engagement because she said, I sat down with my daughter and said, if we have to, recall the wedding invitations, then we have to do it. You cannot marry him if this is what, So anyway, it was a very funny story. So sometimes those standardized tests can go awry if you're not careful, just like with the ACT or the SAT.
Oh, they can. But, it's funny. Bruce and I always worried more about the couples who had 99% agreement than the couples that most people would look at and go, is this couple really ready for marriage?
Right.
Because that actually means that they're sharing their feelings.
Right.
And recognizing the issues that they have versus a couple who's 99%. Because in no marriage do you agree 99% of the time.
Right. Yeah. This is true. Yep. Absolutely. And, well, so the Archdiocese put out sort of a call for people to help with this kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
And you and your husband saw it, and then
we actually started an annulment ministry first.
Oh, interesting. Now, how did you come to do that?
It was, my husband got an annulment through the church because he was married before.
Okay.
And he actually met with Monsignor Patrick Lagus, who was head of the program at the time. And he promised Monsignor that, if he ever retired, that he would help.
Okay. So help other couples.
We basically did the whole section before it went to the Archdiocese, helping them fill out the forms.
Right. So you were what they call a field advocate.
Yeah.
Which is not really
a field advocate.
Okay.
Before the field advocate.
I see. Okay.
Because so many couples get lost in all those questions on an annulment.
Right. Oh, it's an extensive, The annulment questionnaire is, because of the seriousness, of course, of what the, court at the tribunal mm-hmm. is going to be looking at, the questions are quite extensive and quite personal. A lot of people get very, very intimidated by them.
They do. And that's where we came in and said, wait a second, they don't need a 10-page answer to this.
Right.
Let's help you get...
Or conversely, you can't give a one-sentence answer
exactly.
to this. Right. Which is, I think, what I have seen in cases where I've served as either a witness or people who have asked me for my assistance in filling out the forms or asked for my opinion. I think a lot of people tend to err on the, we didn't get along from day one. That's the answer to the question. And then there's no elaboration
mm-hmm.
on that. And that doesn't give a judge very much to go on. And so, you need to be thorough, but you don't need to write,
a thesis.
A Dostoevsky novel, by the same token. Okay, so you had done on the other end of the
We went from
special.
The one end,
right.
And then we went to the seminar. I went to the seminar about the new marriage regulations in the Archdiocese and actually met Andrew Like.
Oh, okay.
And
describe who Andrew is for our listeners
Andrew
who aren't familiar
time,
with him. He may be listening because
we're
Facebook friends, and I let him know that I was going to be interviewing you today.
Andrew at the time was working at the Archdiocese in the marriage ministry, and he was handling the Focus. So
mm-hmm.
we ended up going through training and then started doing focus inventories at that time when Andrew was still doing it. And then over time, it's changed and gone from the archdiocese to parishes directly.
Okay. All right. And how long did this preparation to learn how to do this? So if you're a couple, someone listening today who wants to, you know, become involved in this and thinks, you know, gosh, I've been married 20 years now, I could probably help younger couples. How would they go about doing that?
Well, I know that Focus Inc. Mm-hmm. Does have now online training,
right,
that you can do. And it's going to take you a good 6 hours.
Right. So I've just looked it up while we were talking. So it's focusinc.com, mm-hmm. www.focusinc.com. And it came out of the Archdiocese of Omaha,
right,
in Nebraska. And so it's founded on the principle that in marriage, communication and problem solving are really going to be the key skills that you need to have going into marriage. And so it helps you to learn not only about what the program is, but how you can become more involved and become either a facilitator yourself or find a facilitator who will work with you and your fiancé prior to marriage in order to help prepare you.
Yeah, because if you don't have communication in a marriage, it's going to fail.
Correct, right. Well, if you don't have communication in any relationship,
exactly,
it's going to fail. But particularly in marriage where, you know, there has to be a very specific kind of communication. There has to be a very honest and direct kind of communication. So I'm glad you've raised that. But so tell me, Yvonne, you went through, my goodness, 800 couples. That is quite an extensive history of people that you've helped. How many years did...
That was over about 10 years.
10 years to do it. So how many couples a year would you facilitate marriage prep for?
Oh, I mean, some years it was more, some years less. But normally we did about 70 or 80 couples.
Okay.
Some weeks we would do 4 couples in a week.
Oh, boy. That's a lot of... I mean, when I hear that, Yvonne, first of all, thank you. That's an incredible gift of your time that you and your husband gave to, you know, the people of the Archdiocese of Chicago when you were doing this. Can people be sort of involved as their time permits? Because I know for many couples who have, you know, might have younger children or elderly parents that they're taking care of on the other end of the spectrum, that's a huge commitment of time. How did you manage that with all the other things, with your husband's job and with, but you said your husband had retired before
yeah,
you got
and
into
we
this.
Would basically okay. meet at the house. For a while, we were meeting at our local parish, and then we moved it to the house. And so we would commit at night.
Yeah.
And that was an easy commitment for us to do.
Right.
Luckily, at this time in our lives, we didn't have small children in the house that we had to worry about. We
right.
could totally commit to this.
Right.
And with some couples we met with once, we had one couple we met with 8 times.
Wow. And so is that up to the couple then?
Part of it is up to the couple, and part of it is how far you get in the inventory and how many issues.
Okay.
I mean, we had one couple, the first question on the inventory took us 2.5 hours.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. For one question?
For one question.
Wow. Can you share with us what that question was?
Gosh.
That must have been a doozy. It sounds like that was a very, do we like each other? Was it a question
it
like
was
that?
It was almost like that. Yeah, I'm comfortable with my responsibilities in this marriage.
Wow. Okay. My goodness.
And it skewed the whole rest of the inventory, which is what we found over time is when an inventory is really bad, like you mentioned earlier, the
right.
person who answered a question wrong, it's not normally that they disagree. It's just that there is an underlying issue or two that is skewing everything
right.
on the inventory. And what we find now with more and more people not really talking and everything is social media, everything is texting, couples don't sit down and talk anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we were surprised at how many couples we come in and we'd say, well, how do you feel about this or how do you feel about that? And they go, we never discussed that.
Right, right. And you know, that's a difference between how couples communicate since the time that I got married. Mm-hmm. And now my husband and I just hit our 20th anniversary, now 20 years later, because, I mean, I think there were cell phones, but there was not texting.
Mm-mm.
There was not email. I remember when I started my first job, I had a typewriter. I didn't have a computer. And so all of these technological advances have not only changed how people date, how people meet, how people communicate with each other, but they've also changed how couples communicate within their, you know, dating relationship, mm-hmm. and then when they're married. So yeah, that's changed vastly. I mean, my husband and I, we learned to communicate with each other by speaking to each other because that's all there was basically.
Right.
So, but I've noticed, you know, with my own teenagers, with a lot of their friends, a lot of their conversations and relationships are built up over electronics.
Yeah, they don't talk. Everything's texting or
right.
social media and whatever else.
Well, I was reading a very funny story. I think it was in the Wall Street Journal where they had surveyed a number of teenagers and 20-somethings. When you go over to a friend's house, mm-hmm. you know, to pick up a friend, to go out somewhere, to meet, it was 9 out of 10 of younger people under 25, didn't ring the doorbell. They texted them mm-hmm. from outside the door and expected the person to come out. They didn't ring the doorbell, shake the parents' hands, say hello to the parents. And so, you know, I've not allowed that in my house yet. I don't mind if they're texting a friend, you know, that they're going out to a movie with and they're meeting. But I said, if someone's coming over to pick you up, they need to ring the doorbell and I need to see who you're, you know, walking away with. So, so that's fascinating. Well, I'd like to get a little bit into the book now. And why don't we do that? We'll take a break. And then when we come back, we'll start discussing why you wrote the book and what contributions you feel that your book makes that aren't really available on the marriage preparation book market.
Okay.
Well, stay tuned. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change.
On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
And welcome back. I'm Mary Helen Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I have the great privilege this hour of being joined by Yvonne Britzolera, who is the author, along with her husband, Bruce Britzolera, of the new book, Now and Forever, Are You Ready for Marriage? And just before the break, we were talking about the vast number of marriage preparation books that are available on the internet. I just went to Amazon, where you can find Yvonne and Bruce's book on Amazon.com. And there are, if you Google marriage preparation books, 299 different books will pop up on Amazon's website under books. So, Yvonne, tell me, I know you are very familiar with so many of these resources yourself, having prepared more than 800 couples for marriage. But tell me, why did you feel it necessary that you make this contribution, and how does your book sort of stick out in terms of what's available on the market already?
Well, with our divorce rate being close to 50% right now,
right.
There's about 2 divorces a minute is what I read recently.
Right.
Anything that Bruce and I can do to help couples, even if it helps one couple, to be better prepared for marriage. Because unfortunately, Mary, we are in a situation, we have less and less priests.
Right.
The priests don't have the time to really sit down always with couples.
Right.
Based on all of their other duties. You know, the Archdiocese is allowing more and more things to go, of Chicago is allowing more and more things online.
Right.
And if you don't have a one-to-one interaction with a couple, yeah, I think something can be missed. And what our book hopes to do by asking questions in really sometimes stupid, yeah, someone might read and go, do people really have an issue with this or with that? Yeah, they will, because it's the small things in marriage that sometimes cause the problems. It's not the really big things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not discussing it, not communicating with one another, holding back your feelings, and also a lot of times just letting life get in the way.
Right.
I mean, you and I were discussing how busy you've been recently and how that's kind of taken away from your family. And that's something that happens to everybody.
Right.
And
right.
These couples really, they need a resource that they can go to. And so many couples, which is sad, is they'll spend 1,000 hours preparing for their big wedding day.
Right.
But if the, yeah, if their priest says to them, I want you to go attend a pre-Cana class and I want you to do a marriage prep inventory, and that might take 24, 48 hours of their time.
Right.
They don't want to do it.
Right.
I don't have time for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's similar to what I would hear sometimes from couples. This is one, you know, listeners, most of you know that I spent 28 years working for the Catholic Church in a variety of different capacities, but at one point worked in the chancery office. And so we would sometimes get calls from either a bride or a groom, or a bride or groom's mother or father, complaining about the fee that the church charged for the wedding ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
So most parishes have a donation that is asked for and required, anywhere from, you know, $250 to $500, depending on where the church is located and the different, you know, services the church might offer. And people would say, you know, the church is a church, why is it can't charge me to have the sacrament, which is true. You're not being charged to have the sacrament itself. What the cost is underwriting is, first of all, it's you have to remember everything from the heat to the air conditioning,
mm-hmm.
to the security guards that churches often have nowadays, to the person who has to open the church and close the church. And, you know, that requires staff to help coordinate the aspects of your wedding day,
you know,
making sure the bridal room is clean in the back, making sure that the bathrooms have been cleaned and have, you know, the toiletries that you need available for your wedding guests should they need to. So, you know, there's a variety of different practical things. And I remember one priest said to me, these are sometimes couples who have no problem spending $1,000 on cake, but they balk at having to give the parish where, you know, the marriage is going to be created $300 to cover things like our heat or our air conditioning, or making sure that, you know, they will have everything they need so that their ceremony goes off without a hitch. So sort of to that point, but, you know, what you know, in reading your book, Yvonne, what I liked about it and what I found was different from some of the other books that I have seen, and even, you know, some of the books that I was given when I went through my own pre-Cana program, is that it's very practical. And like you said, you know, it's not often one big thing, although it sometimes is, and why marriages end. You know, there's an affair, or there's, you know, one spouse just decides to abandon the marriage. But it's sometimes just accumulation of a lot of little things. And then you sort of get to the point, if you don't have good communication skills, that you think, I simply cannot live with this person one more day. So I liked that it was very practical. In fact, I was thinking this morning, you know, you have a whole section, which I think is very practical, and someone who's not married might not understand why you would even include this particular topic. And listeners, the book is divided up into how many topics? About 30 different topics.
Mm-hmm.
30 different topics. That tend to come up when either couples disagree about something or argue about something, areas around which there could be a source of conflict. And one of them is the kitchen and housekeeping.
Yeah.
And so I remember when we were first married and, you know, my husband's from an Italian-American family, or at least in part Italian-American, and my parents are from Scotland. So, you know, we would get, like, the Kraft Parmesan cheese that you buy in the jar, you know. I remember we were in the Jewel. It was probably one of our first shopping trips together. And so I just put that in the car because for me, you know, for my family, that was Parmesan cheese, you know. And he looked at me and he said, you're not going to buy that, are you? And I said, well, why wouldn't I buy that? You know, so that wound up being a source of argument, you know, and he was used to getting, you know, a block of Parmesan cheese and you grate it yourself and that's cheese, but you don't buy this stuff, you know, this processed stuff in a jar. So anyway, we laugh about that now, but it became kind of an argument, you know?
Well, Bruce thought I was trying to kill him when we first got married.
Oh, why is that?
Well,
first of all, were you trying to kill him?
No.
Okay.
We had some high cabinets, and I'm 5'3", so I'm vertically challenged. He's 5'11".
Okay.
Well, I would put the stuff on the edge of, you know, the cabinet, and he'd open the cabinet and something would fall out.
Oh, my goodness.
So he finally realized when he saw me walking under the cabinet door that I just couldn't reach. So he went out and bought me a little step stool.
Oh, well, there you go. Problem solved, right?
That was the problem solved. So, yeah, we always tell suggested to our couples two things. One, you have a bitch night.
Right. Okay.
And that is the night that when little things bug you, like you leave the bottles out, you don't do your dishes, you leave your Coke can, don't put it into the trash can, et cetera. That's when you discuss that stuff.
Right.
Once a week after you go to Mass, you should have a couple checkup where you basically say, hey, is there anything that I need to apologize for? Because a lot of times we do hurt our couple, our partner.
Yes.
And we don't realize it. So it's a good time to clear the air and say, I was kind of upset earlier this week when you did this or this. Yeah, it's a good time to find out, is there something your partner needs from you?
Right.
That you're not giving them?
Right.
And basically, how do you think we did this week? What were the ups and downs in our marriage?
Right. Well, you know, sometimes, though, that's a really good suggestion. I don't know that I've had a conversation like that with my own husband in quite a while, but in part because of the busyness of raising younger children.
Mm-hmm.
So carving out that particular time is really hard to do sometimes, but, you know, it's important.
It is. And you have to have date night and you have to have your time.
Right.
Where you can just kind of, even if you tell the kids, you can go watch this video, and that's our time. We don't want to, you know.
Right.
Mom and Dad need some time, too.
Right, right. And well, Father Rocky Hoffman, who has written the book Marriage Insurance, also makes a very similar point where he talks about how critical it is that if it can be done, the couples go to bed at the same time every night. Because that is when the house shuts down, the house is quiet, and you can actually kind of talk to each other, you know, and you have some privacy, you have your own space, and, you know, you can connect with each other at the end of the day. So, you know, that's a recommendation that sounded odd to me when I first hear it, but now I appreciate the wisdom in it.
Yeah.
And then he also, of course, talks about what, you know, reiterates what you've said, Yvonne, and that is that possibly a weekly date night, but certainly at least once a month a couple has to go out by themselves without the children. And that is, even if you are going, you know, to McDonald's to have a Coke, it's really important that you go out by yourselves and you talk.
In an area where you can talk.
Right.
Because so many people are always, oh, I'm going to a party. Well, you're not going to talk at the party.
Right. No. No, certainly not in the way that you need to. Or, you know, you might be able to find a quiet bar, but, you know, you can't go to something like that either. I mean, it has to be intentional. Mm-hmm. It has to be intentional time that you're spending with each other.
And you do. If you can't discuss what's wrong in your marriage, your marriage isn't going to last.
Well, one of the points I like that you make under your chapter on communication skills is where you talk about avoiding distractions. And you say, put away all cell phones, tablets, computers, turn off the television, because distracted listening says that you really don't care what your partner has to say. And I think, you know, that's, you know, we just had the television when I first got married, and cable was a big, you know, cable could be, you could sit there surfing all the different cable channels. That could be a tremendous distraction. But now I think, you know, it's the temptations are so much more prevalent not to really listen to your partner. And that's what I think also that date night, whether it's weekly or monthly, because normally, you know, you won't have your cell phone out at the table if you're in a nice restaurant or if you're, you know.
You hope.
You hope, right. Yeah. I mean, there's some restaurants I've seen now that actually ask you, please don't have your cell phone out or have it on silent mode, because this is a place we like to be, an oasis from technology. And please, you know, try to respect that we really don't like people on their cell phones while we have other guests who are trying to have dinner. So all the much more for your marriage. So but I, you know, again, I like this, that you have such specific topics. How did you come up with the 30 segments of this book?
It's basically looking at different areas in marriage that you have to contend with. And a lot of the, a lot of the marriage prep books will deal with some things. But, for instance, we deal with, you know, what happens if a family member gets sick.
Right.
because that is a situation that as we get older, and sometimes even when we're younger, we have a family member who's sick, and what are the responsibilities that you have to your family?
Right.
Social media, social concerns is a really big thing nowadays for a lot of younger people, and we see them out, you're protesting, doing this, this, this. Well, you have to make sure you're both on the same page with that.
Right. So by that, you mean sort of hot-button social issues of the day. So
yeah,
things like abortion or like, you know, same-sex marriage, things like that.
Right. If one person is really strong into something and the other person's not a believer, they may not want you to be involved or they may have a problem with that.
Right, right. And it doesn't mean that you can't have a successful marriage if you disagree on an issue like that. I have one of my closest friends, she and her husband, she was very pro-life and he was very pro-choice. And at the beginning of the marriage, what they sort of worked out is that she could have her beliefs, he could have his, but he would never, ever, in the context of their marriage and any children they might have, he would never suggest abortion for her. He would never bring it up. He would never raise it. They kind of maintained that stance between each other for about 10 years. And then just by her very patient, loving, you know, intellectual witness to the pro-life position, he's almost stronger on it now than she is. I mean, he has become a real believer because he really had to analyze his own feelings about it. They had many, many conversations about it because she kind of became involved in doing things in the pro-life movement. So she had to explain to him, well, no, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing today. And this is why I'm going to give my volunteer hour a week. I'm going to dedicate it to this. And so, you know, he became just exposed to how the pro-life community really operates and what it really believes. And that wound up being a conversion point for him. But I know it was a source of tension early on in their marriage. So do you recommend that if you do have differing viewpoints that you maybe try to come to a compromise stance?
It is always in terms of compromise. And that's getting harder and harder now because the average age that men are getting married is 28.7 and women is 26.5. By the time you're in your mid to late 20s, you have your
You're set in some of your ways.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't marry till I was in my early 30s, and that was the case for not all of my friends, but a good number of them. And that's why, you know, I'm surprised now to see, I think there is a little bit of a trend now of people getting married in their early to mid-20s, which, you know, I would have said kind of back in the day, my goodness, that's awfully early to get married. However, you know, there's an article that's out by a woman who was sort of a huge fan of that television series Sex and the City. And actually moved to New York and kind of tried to model her life, you know, like Carrie Bradshaw, the center character, you know, where there's a lot of uncommitted sex, a lot of sexual relationships that don't end in marriage. And she very much regrets embracing that lifestyle now. She said, if I had not become so enamored of this kind of sex without consequences sort of world, I might be married now. I might have kids. I might have a family, you know, and I don't have any of those things because I was convinced that not settling down was the more mature thing to do. And if you do find that person that, and you really do feel like this is the right person, it's sometimes better to get married early and begin your life together rather than to delay it and postpone it, thinking maybe someone better will come along in 5 years, and then being 39 and no one better has come along, you know, and you think, my goodness, I should. I have a friend to whom that happened, the guy she dated all through college. And then, you know, there was they had a breakup. And I think she was kind of thinking maybe something better might, you know, emerge. He had done something that annoyed her. And, you know, 15 years later, she was still talking about him, saying, "I that was a mistake I made." And he wound up and married someone else. But, you know, there was still a great longing that she had for that particular person. And she really regretted making that mistake. So had she not, you know, she said, "I wish we had worked things out and not both have been so stubborn."
Right. So. And now you also have all the younger generation with that FOMO, fear of missing out. They're wanting to do all their traveling.
Right.
Do everything before they get married. Because for some reason, I think that they see their parents who were so busy raising them and everything else, they never had time to go out and take vacations or do this and this. And they say, well, I want to do it all before I get married and raise a family.
Right, right.
Versus our generation who's like,
okay, terrific.
Yeah, find the next one.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Okay, well, listen, when we come back, Yvonne, we'll continue our conversation about your excellent book, Now and Forever, Are You Ready for Marriage? We'll get into some of the topics that you raise in the book. And so don't go away if you're interested on how to better prepare young couples for marriage. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
Newsflash! This just in, Winds of Change podcast can now be heard on your iPhone and Android phone. Download the TuneIn Radio app and search Winds of Change, and Winds of Change will be right there for your very ears. We now return you to Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, two blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today here for Father Anthony on listener-supported Winds of Change. This show is brought to you by you. So if you're a fan of Winds of Change and you want to help keep us on the air, please go to ststandschurch.org and then click on the radio tab to donate. We are grateful for our many benefactors and supporters who believe in this talk format of really exploring issues that involve your life, your faith, your family. And so if you can support us, we'd be very grateful. And for the last hour, listeners, I've been joined by Yvonne Brizolera, who, along with her husband Bruce, has written a new book just out. It's available on Amazon.com, called Now and Forever, Are You Ready for Marriage? Which I have to say, among all the marriage prep books and marriage books I've read, is a really, really practical guide to issues that might come up in your everyday marriage or relationship. And one of the things, Yvonne, that I know every book I've ever read always has the same sort of, there are some issues and some, you know, aspects of marriage, I think, that are hit in every single marriage prep book that's on the market. And the one that's consistent among all of them is one of the leading causes of a rupture in a marriage or a disagreement is finances.
Yes.
How you spend your money. And I know you devote even more time to that than you do to some of the other topics, like the kitchen, which is still remains my remains my favorite chapter in your book. But talk to a little bit about how I'd love to hear some of the experiences you've had just as a marriage pre-Cana facilitator with couples and how you talk to them about finances.
Well, as couples are getting older, it used to be when you were young, it didn't matter because you were basically building your money together.
Right.
Now you've got couples who are each, you know, making their own money and they're bringing it together. They're used to spending it however they like.
Right.
So it's about having that honest conversation of, yeah, this is how much credit card debt I have. This is
how much student loan debt I have, which is another, you know, there was just a story on the front page of the Chicago Sun-Times on Sunday featuring four different young people. Each of them had $100,000 in school debt. That can be a crushing, you know, financial burden to a young family. And it can prohibit you from getting your first house, from buying a car even.
Yeah, it can do all of that. If you aren't honest about, one, how much debt you have, and then also how you spend your money, it can cause problems. We tell couples, you know, who would, a lot of our couples we worked with lived in downtown Chicago, and they said, well, we're in this really small apartment. We'd like to get this really big apartment. I'm like, okay, and how are you going to pay for that?
Right.
Because during the conversation, they were telling us about what kind of car they wanted, which trips they wanted to take, et cetera, et cetera. I said, yeah, there's only so much money to go around.
Right.
You've got to pay your bills first, and then you have discretionary income.
Right.
And that discretionary income, how are you going to use it? It may be that you decide, that you want to go on a vacation instead of taking that bigger apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how people got into so much financial trouble.
Right.
Yeah, you have women who are used to going, getting their hair highlighted, their massages, their nails done, and guys who want to go to the Bears games
right.
or Cubs games. And these things, yeah, you have to start negotiating them and saying, okay, there's not enough money in the pot for all of this.
Right. And do I have to get my, you know, and a lot of younger women, they kind of develop personal, you know, maintenance and hygiene, you know, costs. And, you know, once you get married, you really have to look long and hard at those. Like, mm-hmm. you know, do I, you know, when I was, single, because I had a job where I had to be in public so often, I had my nails done once a week. And then after I got married, I thought, do I really have $20 a week to have my nails done? I mean, I liked, you know, to look neat and professional. So I went to every other week, and then I went to once a month.
Yeah.
And because I just felt like I really couldn't justify the expense and frankly needed to learn how to do it on my own rather than, you know, relying on a professional.
And you have to sit down and have those conversations, because what you don't want, you know, there's infidelity in marriage. And most people think of infidelity in marriage as being one of the partners ends up having an affair or ends up building an emotional communication with someone other than their spouse. But
right.
there is also financial infidelity. And
mm-hmm.
if you can't be honest about your finances, then what ends up happening, the wife says or the husband says, oh, I got to hide this.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can't let them know that I just spent this much money.
Right, right.
In the end, it's all from one pot. And if you can be honest about, these are what my priorities are right now, and they will change. And we told couples, you know, if you need to redo this priority list every month, redo it.
Right.
Because, you know, as you continue your marriage, all of a sudden you're going, no, as you said, I don't need to get my nails done every week. But, you know, this apartment's closing in on me, and I'd really start like to get a bigger apartment
right.
or a house. But where's the money going to come from?
Right. Right. And you know, another thing, you know, this is sort of related to finances, but also to children, which you mentioned to me off air, was another, you know, really sort of can be a complicated issue. And that is, you know, a couple really needs to talk about whether or not once children come, whether that's, you know, their own biological children or adopted children, whether or not the wife will work outside the home or she will work full time as a mom, because that decision, couples can have very, very heated arguments. I have an acquaintance who once shared with me that, you know, when she had her daughter, they had just never talked about it. She had just assumed he would want her to stay at home. She assumed he would support her staying at home. And he said, what do you mean you're not going back to work? He was absolutely adamant that she needed to return to her job once her maternity leave was over. And she was stunned that he felt so strongly about it. You know, they worked everything out. But, you know, at the end of the day, he was afraid of being the full-time breadwinner for the family. It scared him just because he had become accustomed to two incomes. They had, you know, they had lived a lifestyle, but she had always assumed he'd just step up when a baby came, and he didn't assume that. So again, they worked it out with the help of someone else, you know, who facilitated the conversation for them. And she did wind up staying home, but they had to change a lot of the way they lived their lives mm-hmm. in order to accommodate, the decrease in income. But also, of course, you know, when you sit down and you look at those charges and you see, okay, well, we're going to have an income decrease, but we're not paying childcare and we're not paying transportation costs for two people and lunches out for two people and, professional wardrobe for two people. So, you know, you do wind up, sometimes it doesn't cost you as much as you think it's going to be able
right.
to stay home with your children.
We
but
even
that's
had
really...
one couple where we asked, well, okay, if you go back to work, who's going to take care of the baby?
Right.
And she's like, oh, daycare. And he's like, no way on earth.
Yeah.
It's going to be a nanny, and she's looking at him, and they'd never had the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't have the conversations about real life and what's going on in life and what can affect you, couples where you have one partner whose family lives out of state.
Right.
Is that a factory?
Well, now there's,
you know,
right.
And what are you going to do at Christmas time?
Right. Well, there's another kind of flashpoint possible conversation. And, you know, when you're getting married, you might not think where we're going to spend the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for some couples, spending Christmas with my parents is a priority. And I will not budge on mm-hmm. it. And we have certain family traditions around Christmas Eve and Christmas Day that I absolutely could not even imagine not doing. Whereas, you know, his mother might feel differently.
Right.
You know, I have an older friend who has four children who are all married, and she told me the way she handled it was that when her children became married, she said, I don't care which holiday it is, but I want one holiday a year when I have everybody. And she said, and could we work out, you know, with your in-laws and everyone else concerned, you know, either I'll have everyone for Thanksgiving, I'll have everyone for Christmas, I'll have everyone for Easter. She tried to be very flexible, but she said, I just want one holiday a year where I have all my children and their spouses and my grandchildren. And that seemed to work out well because she asked for one thing. They were able to kind of accommodate her. You know, Thanksgiving is grandma's this year, and then we're free to go wherever we want, any of the other holidays. And she was very, again, she was very, she tried to be as flexible as she could in terms of which holiday it was. She
yeah.
didn't say, I always have to have Christmas, I, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that is something I was very grateful to hear that, you know, or even things like, for example, you know, Mother's Day and Father's Day, you know, in some families, they're a very big deal. And in other families, there's not. I know a family, Yvonne, in fact, I think that this is a mutual friend we have, where finally it had become such a conflict because some people wanted to go out for brunch on Mother's Day and other members of the family couldn't afford that, mm-hmm. you know, because it's very expensive to do that, where the patriarch of the family, the father, said, listen, this is what we're going to do. All the men in the family, so all his sons-in-law, him, he said, we will plan a meal. We're going to shop for it. We're going to cook for it. The younger boys in the family, teenagers and men in their 20s who weren't married, he said, we're going to, you guys will watch the little kids for the family who have little kids, and we'll cook. And they just had it. They would rotate the houses. They would have it at one family member's house in the backyard. The men would cook and clean and serve the women. The boys who weren't married would take care of the kids. Everybody was together. But he said, finally, you know, I kind of had to take control of that particular holiday because it was causing anxiety. It was then the moms felt like they had to get together on Mother's Day and create something because, you know, they couldn't come to an agreement about where it was. But it had built up to something where, you know, everybody was just saying, well, fine, we won't go see mom on Mother's Day because it's causing too much family conflict. So that was, I thought, was a really good creative solution. It cost them hundreds of dollars less. The men all grew to really like it because they would compete with each mm-hmm. other, you know, who can do the best mimosa and who can do the best Bloody Mary. And the women loved it because they were there with their children. They were there with their spouses. But by the same token, they were also served and got to relax. So, Yvonne, when we come back, we're going to finish up our conversation about your wonderful book, Now and Forever, Are We Ready for Marriage? This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Don't go away.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down. This way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change, one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation, one way or the other.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
All human life is precious, and all humans are created equal, but not all vitamins are created equal. One company's vitamins stand taller than the rest. At For Life Vitamins, we promote health from the womb to the tomb and support the pro-life movement. Dr. Christosik created For Life Vitamins to optimize your healthy habit of taking vitamins and protect the health of unborn children, the infirmed, and the elderly by donating 10% of sales to support Father Bush's life-changing ministry. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 888-879-1190. Dr. Christosik has helped over 13,000 patients reclaim their health with For Life's vitamins. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 1-888-879-1190. Simply change your vitamin company and save a life. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 1-888-879-1190.
Welcome back. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change. I've been joined for this hour by Ivan Bertzolera, who is the author of the book Now and Forever, Are You Ready for Marriage? Ivan is an experienced and seasoned marriage counseling facilitator, a pre-marriage, I should say, marriage counseling facilitator, and having worked with more than 800 couples over 10 years, helping them to prepare for marriage. And what I love about Ivan's book, which I said at the beginning of the program, and I will reiterate it here as we begin to close down our hour, it's so practical, and it comes up with all sorts of topics for couples to consider and discuss that, you know, you might not have even thought you would encounter as a couple. You know, I was telling Ivan, I was at a conference in Washington last week where one of the presentations was by a woman who early on in her marriage realized that they were possibly not going to be able to have children. And as it happens, either after multiple treatments and doctors, all Catholic, and, you know, they went to one of the best Catholic medical programs for infertility in the country, they were still unable to conceive. So they adopted four children, and she had a very beautiful, happy family life. But she said, never in a million years during our pre-Cana programming did we even talk about the possibility that we could be struggling with infertility and what we would do. But that's a very important topic. And, you know, infertility is on the rise in the United States as well. So it's one that may be coming up with, you know, more become a more commonplace issue, that combined with the fact that people are marrying older. So they're marrying, you know, after their window of opportunity for having children has started to close. So, Ivan, of all the chapters of the 30 topics that you raise in this book, if I had to say to you, Ivan, you can give one chapter at a presentation, what is it that you would want couples to come away with?
Basically, it's the chapter on communication, because if you don't have strong communication in your marriage about the big things and the little things, and you don't feel comfortable discussing things with your spouse,
right?
Yeah, then your marriage is never going to survive, because in a marriage, you're never judged. You should never be judged. We all bring our own baggage into the marriage, and hopefully we can unpack it with our partner,
right,
our life experiences. And that's how we all kind of see things in life, is, yeah, how you were raised, how your parents dealt with things, maybe what's happened to you since you went to college or got out of college. And you have to be able to discuss where you come from in order to blend with someone else and develop a new marriage.
Right.
And one of the things we always tell couples is you're going to make mistakes. And when it comes to, you know, sitting down and discussing the problems, it's like going to confession in the Catholic Church. When you ask your partner for forgiveness, you need to tell them, what is it that you did? Why did you do it? And what are you going to do to try to make sure that you don't make that mistake again if you hurt your partner?
Right. Well, that's, you know, I love that line you just said. That's, you know, that in your marriage, you shouldn't be judged. Marriage should be a judgment-free zone.
Yeah.
Now, you can judge actions, right? But, like, you know, you should not have left that toilet seat up 10 times in a row after I told you to put it down. But you can't judge people, right? Because only God knows a person's heart.
Right.
And so we judge actions, but not people. And your marriage should be a judgment-free zone, that you don't judge. Of all the people in the world you don't judge your own spouse.
And it should be an area where you can always discuss your feelings, because you can't argue with somebody's feelings.
Right. Yeah, that's very good. So what are the hints that you give, or the suggestions based on your own, you know, many years of marriage? How long have you and Bruce been married?
Actually, yesterday was our 23rd anniversary.
Oh, my goodness. Well, happy anniversary to
you. Thank you.
I didn't know that. And, well, this is very timely. This is based on your 25 years of marriage now. What are the things that you would say to couples, like, this is what has helped us to communicate better?
Actually sitting down once a week and figuring out what it is.
So you're a big proponent of that weekly date with your spouse.
It's not even, date night is wonderful, and date night should be romantic, because you should keep the romance in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know I find myself a lot of times now, not worrying about what I look like, you know, just putting old grubbies. We have to make one night a week or a month, based on what we can do, something special where we dress up a little bit, where it's not about getting dressed up to go to work. But
right.
We're actually dressing up for our
spouse. For your spouse and not for someone else. Yeah, that's a very good point. And, you know, and I think, too, for my children, it's important to for them to see that mom and dad make that time for each other and make that effort for each other. You know, that I will make an effort for my spouse to put on something nice and go out with him.
Even if that's important, and even if you have time after dinner, we actually recommend a weekly date night, and then as you have kids, a weekly family date night.
Right, 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 right.
Because nowadays, a lot of times you don't get to keep up with what's going on in your kids' lives.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yep.
So having that date night and having separately just where you do kind of check up with each other without interruptions, saying, hey, how's everything going in our marriage?
Right.
What was the high? What was the low? Did I hurt you? And then having a different bitch night, as we call it. Just where you can get out those little things. But you should always remember that any change that you ask your spouse to make, you've got to acknowledge if they make it. And also, it takes, I've read everything from 20 to 1 to 6 to 1. When you complain about something your spouse is doing, you also have to remember to compliment them for everything that they do that is right.
Right. Wow.
You can so easily get into just the griping about everything.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone does change something and you don't acknowledge it,
right,
you're going to say, well, yeah, I did what she asked, or I did what he asked, and he doesn't even notice.
Right.
Why bother?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then you wind up doing those kind of little things for yourself, and you're not doing them for your spouse. You
right.
know? And I had a priest friend who does quite a bit of marriage counseling himself and marriage preparation say to me one time, you know, when couples come to me, you know, say 10 years into their marriage and things have begun to, you know, sour is probably too strong a word, but things have begin to become difficult, and it's a strain, mm-hmm. and you're looking at this person saying, how on earth did I ever marry you? That kind of thing. He said, you know, I tell the men, you need to keep dating your wife. You need to keep pursuing your wife. Do not take her for granted. And he said, and I say to the women, and, you know, you need to think of him as the man, you need to prepare to see him, you know, on your date night or whatever, as if you were preparing while you were dating. You know, mm-hmm. did you, you know, regularly not put on makeup or not be dressed up or not, you know, make an effort to appeal to him when you were dating? Of course not. You know, you wanted to be able to, you know, keep the relationship going. So to kind of keep that in mind mid-marriage, he said, I've given that advice to so many couples. He said, and the couples who take it, you know, are wind up usually working through, you know, their difficulties. It reminded me when he said to me of a comment that I heard one of the couples make at the Golden Wedding Anniversary celebration that the Archdiocese mm-hmm. of Chicago has every year. So these are couples, listeners, that have been married for 50 years, and there's a large celebration, and they all come together. It's really beautiful, and it's really interesting to hear the advice that they give. You know, there's often media covering this mm-hmm. mass, this celebration, and there was one couple who they interviewed, and they said, well, you know, we went through some very rough years. Now, they didn't say months. They didn't say we had a couple of bad days. We went through some really bad years. But you know what? The years pass, and you get past it, and then you look back, and here you are, and it's 50 years, and you've kept your commitment. You've stayed with that same person. And, you know, there was one woman I know who's his husband left her after about 40 years of marriage, 35, 40 years of marriage, and, you know, married someone else. And, you know, she had heard through the grapevine that he took her on some, you know, great European vacation. And I said to her, you know, gosh, how does that make you feel when you hear that? And she said, oh, she said, Mary, I'm not even, it doesn't bother me in the least. She said, you know what? She has no history with him, nor he with her. They can't look back and laugh and say, gosh, do you remember that time? You know, the first time we went to Europe and you got sick on the mm-hmm. flight. He said, when there's the joy of staying in a faithful, committed marriage is that you have built up a history with that person. And that's something that just can't be replaced. So, well, listeners, if you are interested in picking up a copy of this wonderful book, which I think is a great resource, not only for couples preparing for marriage, but also couples who are already married and want to look for better ways to communicate and better ways to grow closer to each other. It's called Now and Forever, Are We Ready for Marriage? By Bruce and Yvonne Brizzolera. And it is available on Amazon.com. Thanks for sharing your lunchtime hour with us, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye, and God bless you. Whoa.
what's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred, the time is now.